I'll never forget the feeling of traveling across Russia for the first time, jumping from river to river in awe of the vast and remote landscape. I knew so little about the region, and few Western scientists even considered working there. Yet I was aware that what was happening in the Siberian Arctic over the coming years and decades, as climate change spurred the thawing of vast areas of permafrost, would have global consequences. The sheer adventure of working in such a challenging and awe-inspiring location, combined with the global significance of the carbon-rich permafrost around Chirisky in the Kalmaya region, was the genesis of the idea that grew into the Polaris Project, to lead a group of students and scientists to Chirisky each year for a research expedition to advance scientific engineering and understanding, to train the next generation of Arctic scientists, and to communicate the results to a broad public audience. It's a book that opens with words like that and doesn't stop until we get to the very last page. The Big Thaw, Ancient Carbon, Modern Science, and a Race to Save the World. Like me, you may well pick up The Big Thaw for the photos. This time, the compelling, full-color cover does not mislead. But read the text for the very human and engrossingly real story of change and mystery taking place in those Arctic lands to our north. From the Siberian taiga, where we started our review, through the coastal plains of Alaska, the deep Canadian interior, this is a book that is a feast for the eyes and, more often than not, a joy for the heart. For this is the story of the Polaris Group, which, as their website tells us, quote, tackles one of humanity's greatest challenges, global climate change, in one of Earth's most remote and vulnerable environments, the Arctic. The Polaris Project probe the vast quantities of ancient carbon locked up in Arctic permafrost, investigating its fate as the Earth warms. Will it remain in the ground as it has for thousands of years? Or will the carbon be released to the atmosphere as permafrost thaws, fueling additional warming? We engage, the website tells us, the brightest young minds from a diversity of backgrounds, propelling them on trajectories to solve the most pressing scientific and societal changes, and we engage the public and decision makers, using the example of the Arctic to captivate, educate, and inform, end quote. As our opening chapter shares with us, there is enthusiasm and hope in the face of the troubling global warming discussed on nearly every page here. As more than one researcher, from youngster to oldster, points out, if we want to have a chance of fixing the global warming problem, we need to know what is causing it. And we probably have a very limited time to make those discoveries and to try to counter them. So enthusiasm for the work at hand infuses every person in each chapter. The writer's passion for their work is evident on the many pages, opening our eyes to the ethnically and racially diverse annual cohorts of undergraduates and graduate students who are part of this ongoing study named the Polaris Project. Their eyes wide open, excitement and joy give our book, our authors, and us readers hope for the years to come. As our author tells us, might there be a role for undergrads and grads in the quest to understand that world and the consequences of choices being made today? Original research, as opposed to recapitulating solutions to familiar problems, was usually reserved for graduate students and postdoctoral researchers who were already set on their career paths. Younger students, however, had more freedom to experiment and take chances. 14 years old might be a bit young to conduct original research, but why shouldn't talented, motivated undergraduates undertake it? And thus was planted one of the seeds that would grow into the Polaris Project, an innovative research and educational venture dedicated to twin ambitious goals to determine what will happen to the vast trove of carbon frozen in Arctic soils as the planet warms, and how that will turn affect the climate, and to recruit, inspire, and train the next generation of Arctic students. With gorgeous, awe-inspiring photography on nearly every page, The Big Thaw unfolds much like an extended National Geographic article, and that's a strong recommendation. We read and we see in-depth dives into the science and the geography of Siberia, of Alaska, with curious portraits of the very human scientists, young and old, who spur the research, noted here, and the narrative unfolding over years, first in the permafrost valleys of Siberia, and then, once the Ukraine war breaks out and greatly limits United States government funding and interest in sending undergrad students in particular to Russia, the story travels to the boggy plains of our own country, to Alaska. As our book's writer tells us, with quite a different set of circumstances for researchers to explore and contend with. As they tell us, quote, the living arrangements, the book tells us, were rustic enough to make the Siberian Science Station seem like a luxury resort. Forget about showering or checking your email. Everything had to be flown in by helicopter to float plane, including the remote boardwalk that was laid down between camp facilities to protect the fragile tundra from trampling. Everyone shared the same bucket toilets. Some would dip their hands from the back of a rubber dinghy to get the closest thing to a shower possible, but they couldn't stay submerged for long because of the leeches. This is science in the rough, for even in Siberia, they were out in the middle of nowhere, exploring beautiful country, learning important facts and ideas being tossed about, but not in a Manhattan or even West Lafayette comfy lab environment. There is definitely a cautionary tale told here as well, along with the adventures and the excitement. The Arctic permafrost, as we read again and again, is thawing. And with that great thaw is coming the release of copious amounts of carbon into the Earth's atmosphere, estimated by many serious scientists as an equivalent amount of carbon already causing havoc in our planet's atmosphere today. Theodore Roosevelt IV provides an epilogue to this gripping and beautifully written book, and he tells us in that epilogue. In fact, it is estimated that the entire permafrost region contains between 1.2 and 1.8 billion tons of carbon. The mid-range of 1.5 billion tons is larger than the 1.2 billion tons of all the remaining accessible fossil fuels, and almost twice the 850 billion tons of carbon in the atmosphere. What we don't know is how much carbon is currently being released from the permafrost. But I don't want to leave you on a negative or downer note. Let's go back to that photography. Photography that pushes this book to the front of my reading list, perhaps yours. Taken over the course of several years as the Polaris Project moved to the Arctic in the summer months, by a photographer embedded into the Polaris Project from its early days, the images capture the earnest work of the students and scientists and the incredible beauty of the geography in which they work. Deeply green prairies, a mock with the short summer's period when life can thrive. Candid photos of the many animals that call these Arctic landscapes their home, from the ubiquitous mosquitoes and flies that annoy and harass the researchers. There are some rather telling and, because I wasn't there, funny moments about those insects. A snowy owl fledgling exploring the new world it finds outside the nest. Ancient Pleistocene-era roots coming through a thawing permafrost surface above. I enthused about reading captivating science writing with the book Best American Science and Nature Writing for 2020. And I'll enthuse as much about the synergy between photographer and writers today. Let's finish with a look at one of the more intriguing changes being implemented as part of this whole Arctic permafrost thawing process. It's an idea that the Polaris folks came across as they were spending deep time in the Siberian wilderness, coming across a scientist and his son who were implementing something they called the Pleistocene Project. It's unfolding in a huge, many, many multiple acre swath of Siberia. It's an audacious attempt to recreate the long ago flora and fauna of this northern world, with the goal of recreating an expanse of land that could greatly reduce the escape of permafrost methane and other carbon gases that are promoting the heating of the Earth's climate. Here's a little bit about that exciting project. Sergei Zimov and his son and successor, Nikita, is the founder and director of the Russian Academy of Sciences Northeast Science Station, one of the world's largest Arctic research stations. And as we heard before, something of a Shangri-La compared to the conditions found in research stations out in remote Alaska. Sergei's more serious meditations on Earth and evolution have taken concrete form, our book tells us, in an epic-crunching landscape-scale experiment on an expanse of grassland, tundra, and large forest near the Kolyma River, 260 miles from the Arctic Ocean. This is Pleistocene Park. Let me read that again. Sergei's more serious meditations on Earth and evolution have taken concrete form in an epic-crunching landscape-scale experiment on an expanse of grassland, tundra, and large forest near the Kolyma River, 160 miles from the Arctic Ocean. This is Pleistocene Park, dedicated to nothing less than restoring what was once the world's most extensive terrestrial ecosystem, saving the permafrost and protecting wild habitats and human civilization alike from a fatal collision with a changing climate. Sergei argues that back in the day, the Pleistocene days, great grazers had lived in symbiosis with grasslands, the youngest and most productive terrestrial ecosystem. Fast-growing grasses are wonderfully efficient at turning water, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide into nutritious proteins and sugars. They can support more faunal biomass than tropical or temperate forests. Their deep roots also absorb water and anchor soils, preventing runoff and erosion. On the mammoth steppe, as on today's savannas and prairies, the giant herbivores would trample the mosses and saplings and girdle or uproot grown trees, making space for resilient, fast-growing grasses. Their waste would fertilize more grass growth, a nutritional feedback loop. And thus the Pleistocene Park's bold mission, to show that it's possible to recover the mammoth steppe by removing mosses and trees to native grasses that can grow and reintroducing the grazers that entertain and sustain the system. And then to extend that process with a network of restored tracks across Siberia and North America until they join to reconstitute a Beringia-wide steppe, protecting the permafrost and stabilizing the climate. Today's book is full of exciting, bold projects. It's full of how the day-to-day science is done as well. The students going out into the bogs, into the rivers, into the soils, and pulling out samples of the study late at night. It's quite a book. The Big Thaw, Ancient Carbon, Modern Science, and a Race to Save the World. From day-to-day experiments through bold, exciting thoughts and ideas to implement to save the world from itself, from the thawing in the Great North. It's a book, as I said, to treasure for the eyes and for the mind as well. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.